Okay, the next thing is the executive director report, and that's Greg. And after the executive director's report, we'll have a brief break for dinner, followed by our thematic discussion, truncated, on community membership and community programming development and outreach goals. Greg?
Well, it's great to be back in Houston. The first time I came here for a PMB meeting, I was applying for this job. And that weekend, I spent most of the time in my trapped in my hotel room. I think the idea was to protect me from finding out too much. No, not really. Actually, it was so that I wouldn't have any improper contact with the board. And anyway, I wanted to tell you it was very nice for you to let me out of my room this time. it's been quite a year. Sometimes I feel like I spend most of my time just hiring people. And hearing complaints, disputes between staff members and between board members and between board members and staff members and between listeners and staff members, and I could go on. But, you know, a lot gets done. I hired two general managers this year, to be accurate, two interim general managers, plus an interim national technical director, and most recently a network program coordinator. And he's not interim. He's also not in the room. And he's half my age and very tall. And I'm not sure how I feel about that, actually. Old. I guess old. And vertically challenged. And when there isn't some, personnel brush fire to put out, I did get to do a bit with programming, which I thank you for, which is one of the main reasons why I wanted to be here. Pacifica launched three new shows this year. Out of the archives came From the Vault, which highlights our past and the great moments in radio that Pacifica has been involved with. And even though it has just one staff member who is not even a regular employee, and is produced essentially without any sort of real budget, I think it's really been a success. And we are now discussing how to make it an official part of the national programming lineup. That's underway, and some of you on the Finance Committee will be hearing from us real soon on that. Out of KPFK came Informativo Pacifica, a daily newscast in Spanish. This was a bit controversial. And there are still issues being resolved around it. But I think it's a very innovative move and in the right direction, especially now in cities like New York, in addition to Los Angeles, where it came from, and Washington, D.C. I think this kind of programming, especially if it's part of a general effort to build loyalty among Latino listeners, addresses two basic tasks: reaching underserved communities and attracting new listeners. And finally, there was Informed Dissent, and this was a national initiative, the first new series, as far as I know, in several years. And it involved more than 50 people. It focused mainly on election-related issues, and it offered 4 half-hour segments for a 10-week period. Considering the short lead time we had in the end and the hoops that the show had to jump through because it was the first time we'd done this in a long time, I consider it a small triumph. An example of the type of collaboration that's possible, despite any shortcomings it may have had. But at the moment, I have to say its future and whether it will be resuscitated or continue is in doubt. Also, as Ursula reported, we saw Pacifica's affiliate network top 100 stations through the innovative outreach and strategies of Ursula. And I have to say we do have an outreach strategy here, and it does exist, and it is being pursued, as about as far as possible with the less than adequate support or resources that we've been able to provide to this point. And so I'm glad to see that we're talking about doing more. We aired about a dozen specials, including very, very memorable coverage of the Immigrants' March to demand their rights. And we launched several new websites, as Peter's as reported. People were complaining that it's taking too long, but this kind of transformation does take time, and I think the results show that it was worth the wait. And we also joined with other independent media, as Ursula has already reported, in the Radio for People campaign to encourage local groups around the country to apply for the new non-commercial license, really helping to regain our status as a leader in the independent media movement. Also, we had a more sort of regular contact between managers and staff through the operations group. I think we've done some good work during the year, in refining how we do national programming, how we deal with specials, and in development of some uniform policies, although more needs to be done. And most recently, we had a discussion 2 days ago in which we began a process of goal setting together for the coming year, talking about, strategies for increasing subscribers and listeners. The group wanted to have a full discussion of licensing. The board is going further than the staff had gone in their meeting, and they want to also look into how that relates to fundraising strategies, which is something, that really does need more study. And they also talked about a kind of a schedule for the next several years of commemorating key events. And just to remind you of what some of those will be, this year, 2007, is the 30th anniversary of WPFW. And we want to do some programming during this year to commemorate that. Next year is the 40th anniversary of 1968, and Brian has talked to you about trying to work within the archives to bring out some of the material we already have, and we want to develop some programming through the stations and nationally to commemorate 1968. In 2009, KPFA will be 60 years old. In 2010, KPFT will be 40 years old. In 2011, WBAI will be 50 years old. And so in each of those years, what the managers and the staff have said they want to do is to develop programming specifically designed to commemorate and highlight the history of each of the stations in sequence and to sort of celebrate our past as we celebrate these milestones. So I think in general, it's been a pretty good year. And also I think this day in this room and some of the other things I've seen indicate that there is a sort of a subtle kind of cultural change that's underway. Maybe a bit more trust is being developed. And that makes me very happy. Financially, on the financial side, our revenues went up 6.8%, while our expenses only went up by 3.1%. We can be happy about that. But, as you've already heard, listenership appears to be down at some stations, depending on how you measure it. We don't really have completely measures of what the Internet is beginning already to produce in terms of balancing out some of the losses from our broadcast operations. But we are, if you look at the long-term trends, seeing something happen right now that we should be concerned about. And it's aging, as you also know. Sometimes we've had to extend our fund drives to meet goals. And certain costs, and I highlight legal costs, governance costs, and employee benefits costs, are consistently rising, at least for the last few years. Current budget process is rigorous, but some people still aren't completely satisfied with it. My perspective is that the issue, perhaps it was in the past, but is not now an issue of transparency. I think we have achieved a certain level of transparency, and although people will always want a bit more, but I think the issue actually now is that the process that we have at this point isn't yet providing us with a way to really adequately identify and rank some of our key collective priorities, things like retooling our infrastructure, training programs, research and development and promotion. These are things that we all know are important, but the process that we're currently using hasn't allowed us to come to an agreement about how and where we're going to get the resources to fund those things. Some people ask whether I'm going to write a book about Pacifica after I leave here. And what I usually say is that all the names would have to be changed, or else I'd be sued six ways from Sunday. But, the thing of it is, the ironic part is, in order to sell a book, you need actually a crisis. You need conflict and, jeopardy, all of that stuff. And actually, what I've been trying to do is actually to kind of calm things down, which isn't going to make really very exciting reading if I were to succeed. I've been trying to sort of lower the temperature a bit, keep the productivity going, maybe he helped to increase it in some small way, while at the same time highlighting, issues that I feel shouldn't be avoided. And as a result, still, I've gotten into some trouble this year. over the issue of supervision, over the issue of whether any program should be required for carriage, over questions of whether some parts of the mission may need another look. The easiest way to handle these kind of things is usually to avoid discussing them for as long as possible. But to me, in this job, which you have all told me involves a certain kind of leadership, I would view that as being irresponsible. And so, you know, I'll just have to get into a little trouble from time to time. So, obviously, I think changing programming, whenever you discuss it, is a contentious issue. And I think at this point, having spent a lot of time with the managers, I think they actually want to make changes. But they also feel, and I'm speaking for them, they can also speak for themselves, that they're judged primarily on the basis of how successful they are going to be in fundraising, and primarily fundraising on the air as the main source. And obviously, they and the program directors are facing constantly conflicting pressures from their program councils, from their programmers, and from the community. And you have to acknowledge those pressures. So it makes it difficult for some of these changes to occur on the basis and at the pace that we would like. So far, the argument that I and some others have made that there's a demand for national news and public affairs shows, perhaps produced at the local level, and that they can build loyalty and audience in the future, hasn't really been that persuasive, and there are lots of reasons for that. Obviously, local interests and needs are a major consideration in anything we do in programming. On the other hand, I also think that national intervention and oversight should be possible when local decisions or divisions or paralysis, whatever its source, get in the way of program decisions that we think would be smart. And I have problem understanding how the general managers and sometimes the program directors have actually really enormous discretion in determining whether national programming will be carried, and yet the national organization, national executive that is supposedly responsible for the entire network has so little. There's something in this balance that is a bit off. I also think Pacifica has a responsibility to listeners and to communities beyond the Five Sister Station areas. And you've heard some things about that, particularly in the changing media environment with the changing architecture. We are not simply talking about five areas. Lonnie talked about a regional strategy. Pete and John and Dave and Rob are talking about the fact that this is potentially a global audience that we're looking about. It's not just about five stations. We have a duty to project and to offer an editorial agenda to the country and to the world, and to bring local audiences to that larger audience. I know, in hindsight, I was thinking about this the other day, that it probably wasn't the best approach a couple of weeks ago to demand, in, you know, perhaps not so subtle terms, that I wanted all of the stations to carry a certain special broadcast. I think it was an important broadcast, and I think that the board had expressed itself, but I don't think that this should be about a power struggle between me and general managers, between me and local station boards. I think that's a mistake, and to the extent that I did feed into that, you know, I can see that that was probably an unnecessary move. But on the other hand, I think we should discuss, and we are in the last day or two discussing, how vital public events and national issues should be handled, and that we need to get clarity, because on this issue the ambiguity is keeping us from achieving what we all know we want to achieve. I also think Pacifica spends a significant amount of money already right now on two national shows, and in addition to Democracy Now, and that all the stations should be airing them at reasonable times that are effective in reaching the best audience that they can, and actively promoting them. And the same thing goes for Free Speech Radio News, in which we also put significant resources. One more related point. There are important technical needs and strategies that have been repeatedly presented to this board over the years, presented again today, but often up till now not adequately funded. Pacifica has consistently underfunded technology development. Our equipment is aging. It needs repair. It needs replacement. And we also need to take advantage of the Internet. We are increasingly dependent upon it. It is a vital and perhaps in the future a central, the central distribution vehicle. And we have not really matched our dependence and what we know to be true with an act of collective will. We need to invest in technological improvement, transformation, and coordination. We need to significantly increase our support and our creative thinking in this area, and I think we had a taste of that today. Governance. The most recent election saw a modest increase in turnout. It's a good thing. And the national office tried to be as much as we could a little bit more proactive, but the situation, as you all know, is far from ideal. Some people insist, small group, that the election process is somehow corrupt, that the nefarious forces are conducting some sort of an internal coup, and Pacifica isn't democratic enough, and so on and so forth. What that means is that despite the good news I gave you earlier, the atmosphere of confrontation and mutual suspicion hasn't gone away. And feeding into this, to some extent, is an inability at times by certain members of the staff and some members of the board and our local boards to maintain confidentiality when that is really important. A culture of rumor and, to some extent, disinformation also feeds into this process. You have boards that are, you know, subject to rude outbursts, sometimes disrespectful behavior. We have Robert's Rules of Order, sometimes turned into weapons. Emails used to spread rumors, and productivity suffers as a result of all of this. And what does it all do? It tends to alienate people. We need to realize what the impact of all this really is and how it really undermines what we're all here to do. And I think of this U2 song on Zooropa. It says, if you need someone to blame, just throw a rock into the air. You'll hit somebody guilty. You know, I think you know what that means. Let me pose a fundamental question. Are the elections bringing us the needed talents and resources that Pacifica needs? That's the purpose. Yes, democracy, but also to bring to this organization what it needs to be as effective as possible. Yes, they help to clarify issues, but most of the people, yourselves and all the others, are obviously dedicated. But they take literally 8 months, and now we're talking about a year-long cycle to conduct. They cost at least $200,000. They take up considerable staff time and air time, sometimes with messages that are counter to what we're trying to tell people on a day-to-day basis. I hear complaints, you know, how can we have this incredible negativity on the air, sometimes while we're trying to do fund drives and people putting out messages about how the station is just about to, you know, go under. It's unbelievable. It's contradictory. It's schizophrenic almost. And it leads to interminable debates and disputes. And after all, then, well, you know, who do we represent? You know, do we represent the will of the community? And are we bringing all the talents and skills to the table that we could? Most nonprofit boards, as you well know, recruit people with specific skills that they need to be effective. We have decided that we don't want to use that approach, but we've replaced it with an election process. But the problem is that so far, to some extent, that election process has also produced a culture of warring factions that, to some extent or another, are active at every local station board. So what do you do? Everyone at Pacifica seems to agree that the bylaws need an overhaul. But we also know that it's hard to make even the most modest changes in the bylaws. Another amendment is likely to go down this weekend. So I urge Pacifica to take a comprehensive approach to bylaws revision. And, you know, I'll just give you some items on my list, and I think we should begin to look at it. If you look at all the items on the list that everyone will come up with, some of them are in Les's report. Elections, candidate qualifications, staff eligibility and recognition, hiring and termination, committee powers and structure, board diversity. Shall I go? Excuse me. You want me to start? You want me to go a little slower? I'll go a little slower. elections, candidate qualifications, staff eligibility and recognition, hiring and termination, committee powers and structure, board diversity, affiliates, delegate elections, which we've begun to address, local and national responsibilities, and a clearer definition of the distinction between management and governance. Everybody will have their own list. That's my gift to you to start with. I offer some goals for the year as well. In the area of management, what I would suggest is that we realign national and local management relationships to bring the resources and personnel into a more coherent and more accountable structure. And you've heard some in other forums yesterday, in particular, a little bit about that. Also, continued work toward organizational reconciliation, which is the process we're in right now, and restoration of mutual respect and trust, and the creation of a civil culture. In programming, I think we have to encourage collaboration and involvement across the network, emphasizing diversity, credibility, and free expression. Also, influencing the public dialogue by effectively coordinating national efforts. And also, nurturing new voices and projecting talent and progressive programming by lifting these voices to the national and to the global level. That includes, in my opinion anyway, at least 3 hours of national programming a day on each station. Now, there is already some national programming. That includes Democracy Now!, which is aired for an hour a day on every station now. Free Speech Radio News, aired for a half an hour a day on every station now. But it also includes, I think, between an hour and a half of other programs developed by local stations, developed by affiliates, and also developed by the National Programming Division. Programs like From the Vault, Informed Dissent, and hopefully new programs that we develop with the stations and through collaborations between stations. In the area of development, I think it's imperative that we fully fund the rapid enhancement of technological capacity, including digital conversion, expanded streaming capacity, and internet platforms using open source related content. And also implement a coordinated marketing and promotion effort, identifying new revenue streams. This is also going to be a controversial issue, and plan a major donor and planned giving campaigns that ensure immediate and long-term financial stability. I'll end with this. It's a sort of a variation on something I wrote a couple of months ago when I was responding to an article that had been published in New York. And it's been a year since I came to this remarkable institution, this tumultuous institution, this inspiring organization. And my hope in being here has been to stimulate a process of reconciliation and reconstruction. But I do have to admit to you that I personally don't feel I'm too impressed with my progress to date. Because despite everything I've said and all the good things that are happening and have happened, you know, I feel that the deficit of trust that I sensed when I arrived is still almost as great as it was when I arrived. And this deficit, combined with an organizational structure that was created to prevent another coup, an incredibly laudable goal, also prevents at times the natural evolution of the organization and the emergence of new voices within the institution. I think the answer is that Pacifica has to take more risks. Taking risks, making mistakes sometimes when you're taking risks, is one of the things that makes radio and other forms of communication exciting and creative. We need more risk takers and system changers, people who are willing to step up and to help liberate society and liberate this place from repressive structures, including repressive structures of thought. They call it thinking outside the box sometimes. There's lots of slogans for it. But repressive structures of thought are always an enemy that we are fighting within ourselves. I think I have taken some risks and made some progress and also made some mistakes. But in the end, I've done what I can and what I know how to do, and I want to thank you all very much for for the opportunity that you've been giving me.
Anybody wants to ask questions, we're ready for dinner break.
I see questions. Okay, Chandra.
Greg, I want to thank you so much for your report. Except for your analysis of the election, I really, really liked your ideas. I really found your report, your information, your analysis, and your recommendations refreshing. Providing concrete information rather than fancy flow charts and graphs. I think that, and I have a couple of recommendations for you. First of all, in terms of elections, democracy is messy. Enough said there. Okay. Secondly, I think that in terms of the budget development, that the LSBs need national office recommendations at the beginning of the budget cycle, including from the CFO, the ED, and the national office staff. And I think that would be really helpful in helping us to develop a budget that addresses the national office's needs, and such as things as priority. Because we don't get that information to incorporate early enough on. I find it very disturbing on page 6 when you talk about Francie Moeller and her access reports, that we haven't seen anything from her, that she's refused to work with the KPFA Access Committee, even though it says here that she's completed a site analysis, and we have heard nothing from her at all.
It's in the board packet. It's in that document that you're
holding. We're getting a completed document from her that the Access Committee has never even seen. Okay, so
she submitted it to me, and I've distributed it. I mean, I can't distribute it to everyone. I hope it will be widely disseminated.
All right. Well, I'll have to deal with that later. You talk about on page 5 a two-person executive. In creating a two-person executive, Pacifica's bylaws give the PNB responsibility to supervise both and monitor their relationship. To my knowledge, the Pacifica's bylaws create a one-person executive, and I find it very disturbing that this is the way that you see or define a relationship between the ED and the CFO. So I just want to point that out. The issue of listener revenue and additional sources of income, I think that with a WBAI only getting 9% of their listener sponsors' income and KNA only getting 12 and 17%. If we could reach out to larger segments of the progressive community, I think we could bring in more than 76% of our revenue from listeners, and we wouldn't have to outreach to other sources.
Thank you.
So those are my comments, and I want to thank you very much.
Thank you. Bob.
I have two questions about affirmative action, particularly as pertains to race, nationality, and gender, from the national office. One is that I believe in October on the PNB teleconference, Lisa Davis asked you about the racial composition of the producers who produced the informed dissent program, and you said you didn't know, you weren't even sure what the legal authority was to ask those questions. So one is, did you ever find out what the answers to those questions? And two would be, going forward, both in terms of hiring staff and actually going backward as far as the staff you have hired in your year tenure, but also in designing programming as you give direction to the network programming coordinator. What are you planning to do as far as a full strength affirmative action policy?
Affirmative action plays into every decision we make. In the review of applications. Let me deal with the informed dissent issue. Yes, you're correct. I did provide you a lot of information, the names of all of the people, where they were from, the breakdown of states. Also, I did talk to Dan Siegel about what we could do, and we can voluntarily seek that information. Unfortunately, we don't yet have even the all of the addresses of those people, so we would have to. What we'll have to do, if you wish to pursue this further, is to send letters to the 55 people who were involved in that programming, and then ask them whether they wish to respond to a form, which I did supply you. I supplied you with the form, but we have not followed up on actually mailing it out to all the people who were programmers. I don't yet have the addresses, and I can talk to Otis about getting the addresses, or they may actually be in the National Archives. I'd be happy to do that.
We have all the addresses.
You have the addresses? Well, I'd be glad to mail them out to all those people. It will be voluntary, however. That's the restriction, is that you won't really know what the breakdown is accurately. You will only know those who choose to respond. As far as affirmative action is concerned, I think that my record in employment speaks for itself in terms of the general managers and other people I've hired. As far as what we'll do in the future, we know that the board is interested in this in every situation, in hiring, in programming, and we will have to, you know, continue to monitor it. The issue is, you know, to what extent do you do you tailor your programming? To what extent do you simply make sure that you're being inclusive enough? I think the issue is inclusivity. The issue is not to set categories and quotas.
Sorry.
Thank you, Greg, for undertaking this enormous task and navigating yourself through a very complex organization. In your final thoughts in your report, you said that it's important from time to time to revisit the basic purpose of an organization. In your opinion, what in the purpose, in the fundamental the statement, the purpose of this organization that you see that need to be revised?
Revisit,
yeah.
All right. I'll give you one example, and I've given it to you before. If you look at in the mission statement,
yeah,
I think it's the final statement. It talks about the type of news that we are, you know, are committed to developing, and two of the arguments that it makes. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. That it says, for example, that
to employ such varied sources.
To employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters vitally affecting the community. I don't believe that that is what Pacifica is doing, nor do I believe that if you ask people, they would say that it's actually what they want to be doing. I think that accuracy is important, you know, and fairness is important, but objectivity. And also, even the question of comprehensive, you know, in this culture, in this society, that's one value. But I don't think that's the value that we are actually looking for. What we're looking for is actually focus and serving specific communities. So, you know, we do actually ignore a lot of things. That's not comprehensive. That's one example. I think that the mission is a wonderful statement, but it doesn't answer all questions for today and for the future. And like somebody said, it's a founding statement that needs to be revisited from time to time, refined, and understood, and maybe clarified.
Did you have a follow-up?
Just one follow-up, and then you further go, and you say, when I first came to the board, some people argue that Pacifica should be a vehicle or even a tool of certain movements. Which movements depends on who's talking, but that type of thinking has led to a struggle for ideological hegemony that, in my view, is currently keeping Pacifica from achieving a more noble and important purpose, creating connection between people in disparate communities. What is specific? Can you be more specific about that?
Can I be more specific about
yeah.
that? Yeah. There's, you know, whether media actually carries the sign and identifies itself with a particular movement or cause as being its cause, or whether it simply provides a vehicle for legitimizing movements and issues that other people are bringing forward, to the extent that you become embedded in a particular movement, you then lose your credibility to separate yourself at times when it may be important to do so. I've had this experience myself. There were people in previous eras who identified themselves with certain solidarity movements or certain revolutionary movements around the world, only to find that they were tying themselves to something that later disappointed them, and they were embarrassed. There were, you know, we tied ourselves, you know, to corrupt regimes around the world from time to time that were later exposed. The left did, and at times we didn't support other, you know, say, for example, other peace movement, independent peace movements, because they were on the other side of a regime that we felt we were to support. So I think you need to create a certain amount of distance. I think it's fine to be the megaphone for many, many movements, right? And to bring and to legitimize especially those things that are being suppressed. But I don't think that you should surrender your independence of thought and your ability at times to critique even those people who you feel are your allies.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Margaret and then Thomas, but I want to say in this revised schedule that I've been revising, keeping the times according to what we agreed, I have 25 minutes for dinner following this, followed by, pardon me. Okay. We're in trouble. No, we're not that much. But, so we don't have that much additional time. I'll leave it at that, Margaret. And I'm.
I actually agree with you on the mission. I mean, we looked at it again, you know, the Pacifica mission. The last time it was revised was in 1976, which I, you know. So I'm with you on that one. I wanted to ask a couple of things on the issue of diversity. You address the issue of diversity in terms of hiring and staffing, although I did want a little more clarification on quotas, because I know your point of view is different from Ward Connolly's point of view, who also says he's against quotas. So I'd like to understand the distinction that you're making. But on the question of outreach to diverse communities and how much that is integrated as a priority in your particular vision. And within that context, I wonder if either on the ED level and also raising this with the board generally, if there has been a conversation or discussions with directors who are from communities of color who are the most disenfranchised, although obviously they're, you know, everybody knows they're also white people, you know, who are very disenfranchised, as to what are their ideas on outreach, how to increase our audience, you know, in those communities and in those neighborhoods. You know what I mean?
How much
that is really seen as integral and a priority as we're talking about expanding, you know, programming and listenership and everything else. I mean, hiring of staff is one thing, but in terms of doing that outreach to the youth, you know, communities of color are quite another, and how much to use the people who may be present on this board or at the stations, staff, local station board, even listeners who want to volunteer to be part of that conversation and to actually come up with some ideas and proposals that we listen to. I mean, I just want to say, too, that, you know, it used to be that people understood that empowering those communities was a way of empowering everybody. And somehow that seems to have been lost into this kind of general, we're all in it together sort of thing. So, you know, people don't even want to have a discussion about it. And I think it's an important discussion for Pacifica, and I'm encouraged by some of the things you're saying, but just wondering how that fits into the whole picture.
Well, I mean, to a large extent, I think you actually began to answer your own question in what you said. Let me talk about the issue of how you deal with the diversity issue and what I meant by quotas, all right? I've been approached in various places by activists who say that, for example, well, there's a certain percentage of the population in this city that is Latino or is African American. And then, and therefore, by extension, that amount of programming should also be Latino or African American or, you know, any other community. The argument could be used by any community that organized itself sufficiently. I don't think that you can actually run a radio station or a network that way. In fact, I do know that in some of the documents that have been adopted, including the race and nationality policy, there's a kind of an implication that we should move in that direction. But I do have a problem with that because I do think that that will, in the end, make the programming kind of incoherent. And you'll be constantly subdividing programming, and you'll basically be deciding based not on what is the best program mix and in making connections between communities, but in continuing to segregate communities. And so that's what that's part of what I'm talking about. I don't think that you can make the decision solely on the basis of demographic distinctions. I think you have to make value judgments about what is going to work, which communities you can best serve, and what is the best programming you can bring to them, not the amount of programming that you can bring to them. And also the question is the question who is empowered to produce the programming, or what is the programming actually about? All right? So that's a question too. I don't think these are questions going to be answered simply and by and through statistical or, you know, or simply saying, well, how many people did you put in this category or that category? I think that that's actually in the end becomes divisive if you take it too far. As far as a lot of the other things, I agree completely with a lot of your ideas. I don't think stations or the national office has totally answered those questions. Again, I've only been here a year, and so I haven't solved all these problems. I think the stations are grappling with it. I think one of the limitations, however, is that for, you know, at this point, without having the HD solution or all the new channels that might be created through an internet strategy, you have a certain finite amount of space to work with. And so for every space you open up for one community, you are also perhaps eliminating another community, and they may be disenfranchised. And that's the challenge that program directors and managers face every day. And so I think it's a very delicate situation. I think they're trying, but I think that there is inherent conflict between some of these communities, and it's a negotiation process every day.
We have time for one more question, Thomas.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Goomer, thank you very much for a very thoughtful and indeed, I think, a very good report. I appreciate the concern you seem to show for management and other difficult issues that you have to deal with. I'm worried, though, about two things that you said, and they basically tie into the same thing, this question about race and how it reflects on employment and also programming. With regard to the program, I'm troubled in that you could see that if we broke down some quota system according to race and nationality, ethnic group, that might be divisive. It might not lead to good programming. And, you know, that's troubling. You can't fix that. But, you know, but you can prevent it from happening. And I'm putting more into you than what you actually said, but in effect, that's exactly what you mean or say, or that's how it would work. On the other hand, you honestly outlined the problems with national programming, local programming, and it's beyond almost your kin to deal with, but certainly beyond the powers that you are willing to employ to resolve those problems.
Or can employ.
Well,
let me talk to
you. My point. You can. But yeah. As a black man, hearing some questions from white people about race that would affect black people, native black or red people and others, and then also worried about white people, whatever their taste may be, whether they want diverse programming mix or they just want white programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I've got to be protective against a white person protecting against an effort to diversify programming along the lines that some people have expressed. But you would want to say something.
Sure. As to my race and ethnicity, we could discuss that after the...
If I said the wrong thing, I'll probably...
Yeah, well, we could discuss that later, but because an assumption was made. But in terms of your station, you know, I don't want to impose on your station... 20% or 30% Latino programming, which, if we followed the race and nationality policy to the letter as it now stated, I should be doing. I don't want to impose on your station, which has almost entirely African American employees, a diversity requirement which would force you to change your staffing mix. I heard it described that the WPFW has achieved 100% diversity. I think that was a joke, but
I think it's 100% diverse.
Yeah, well, no. What it was meant to be ironic, I hope, because we don't have diversity at WPFW, And I think we should.
We have some diversity, but I wouldn't say whatever 100% diverse. I guess that means everybody.
No, you know, yeah, right. 100% diversity is, I think that was meant to be ironic.
Okay.
I don't think the solution is to then say we need to change the staffing mix, or we need to change the programming mix, and we need to bring in more Latino programming and more white programming at WPFW. I don't think that that would be a wise decision, all right? But, you know, that's maybe where you would end up a couple of years down the line if you continue to go in this direction. You have to decide what is best for your community. You have to decide what are the priorities of your station and not base it on an artificial formula. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, wait a second. We're at time, but I do feel it's important to say one thing, which is the board did pass a race and nationality policy, and we depend upon you as the executive director to carry out the policies passed by the board. And so when we talk about whether you agree with them or not, we could go through a process to revise them, but it's important, and we have to be able to rely on our executives to implement the policies.
Well, we're not implementing them now and haven't been.
Well, then we need to be able to address that. Now, look, I'm just as a matter of time, here's the issue.